Now we have our next guest now. In her harrowing memoir, Sarah Raimi recounts the decade-long saga of how a seemingly minor illness turned into a prolonged and elusive condition that destroyed her health, but doctors couldn't diagnose nor treat. Worse, as they failed to cure her, they hinted that her devastating symptoms were psychological. Well, she's here to tell us more. Welcome to the show, Sarah.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
You know, it's a shocking story, and I've heard this so many times before, that these terrible illnesses go undiagnosed, and you must think at some point, I'm going mad, nobody believes me.
Yes, so this book is about a family of illnesses like chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, Lyme disease. There's a family that sort of travels together. And when you're told over and over and over again by all kinds of specialists, your primary care doctor, that you are not sick, that you're actually fine, especially when you're younger, it's difficult to stay grounded in what you know to be true, which is that you're very sick. It's a very Alice in Wonderland experience where you know that you are not the upside down one, but everyone else is telling you that you're the person that there's something wrong with.
Yeah, very frustrating it must be. And I know you've put this all into your memoir. We'll tell our listeners the title and everything later. But if we can go back to the beginning of your story, because it all started with a urinary tract infection.
Yes, it started out, you know, a UTI is no picnic. Nobody likes a UTI, but compared to what would come after that, it was very innocuous. I just had a UTI. It wouldn't go away. And so I finally was sent to a urologist who said that I needed something called a urethral dilation, which is a pretty simple procedure in the office. It's a little bit painful, but no big deal. But in reality, this is graphic for your listeners. I apologize, but it's a graphic book. but basically, they put an instrument inside the urethra to dilate it. And in my case, he said, don't worry, sit back, it'll be fine. And it was by far the most painful thing that I had ever experienced. It was like being hit by lightning. It was horrific.
It was
horrifying. And, you know, I'm crying and screaming, and the doctor is telling me to calm down and to, you know, not make such a big deal out of it. And so, which I took seriously. I said, okay, I'm being oversensitive about this, I guess. And so within 12 hours, I went home and I was not feeling well. And I woke up in the middle of the night and I'm drenched in sweat. I have this very high fever. My whole body is shaking. And my mother is a doctor. I was in college and I was home for the holidays. And I dragged myself downstairs, and she immediately realized that I had become septic, which is an infection of the bloodstream. So I immediately had to be taken to the hospital, put on very powerful antibiotics, and kept in the hospital for a week. So something had clearly gone wrong. That is not supposed to happen in, you know, a basic urethral dilation.
Yeah.
But even still, I'm in the hospital, and nobody has understood what's gone wrong. It was just sort of chalked up to, you know, sometimes things go wrong in medicine and we can't account for them, but you're young and you're resilient and you'll be fine. And in reality, I overnight developed, I had been completely fine except for this UTI, but now I was sleeping around the clock, my muscles ached, my colon stopped functioning, I had horrific pelvic pain. So this is really bad, multivarious problem that I'm dealing with. But everybody's like, oh, don't worry, it'll all get better. And, you know, the long and short of it is it did not. It just got worse and worse and worse and worse. And that's when sort of the beginning of the tumble down the rabbit hole begins, of just going to doctor to doctor to doctor to see what's wrong. And after maybe 20 specialists saw me and they ran all of their tests, they slowly started to come to the conclusion we talked about before, which is that, well, these tests don't show anything that's wrong with you. And so therefore, we recommend that you go on Paxil and that you essentially deal with what's going on psychologically.
Crikey. I'm assuming that as well as all the tests, you tried different diets and things like that.
Yeah. So in the beginning, you know, this is a long time ago. This started 17 years ago. So this is like 2003 when it began. It was kind of pre-wellness. The wellness and diets and all of that was not had not really taken hold yet. And so in the beginning, I was very much, my parents were doctors. I went to regular specialists. I was very sure that medicine was going to figure this out for me. And so that went on for several years until I finally, it just became clear that there was no help at all within regular medicine. And that's when I kind of defected into just the wild world of alternative medicine and started trying all kinds of treatments and diet and yoga and all of those things, some of which were helpful, others of which were a huge waste of time and money.
Wow. Which ones were helpful? I want it to be a good... good ending to the story.
Well, so, you know, in the book, I talk about, you know, one of the problems with these illnesses that are so poorly researched and are so poorly understood is that we don't have the triumphant narrative of like, and then I figured out it was this and everything got better and it was fine and I got treated. That is very rare in the world of the mystery illness. And so in my case, some things absolutely helped, just like basic, you know, when I changed to what's called a gut healing diet or a paleo diet, where you're really focusing on your microbiome to get your good gut bugs back in balance, which can be really knocked out of balance by the overuse of antibiotics and a high sugar diet. And so that was one thing that really did, it didn't cure me, but it knocked back a lot of the fatigue and a lot of the, you know, muscle pain and things like that. And so that was good. And yoga in the beginning was quite helpful. But in my case, it actually, one of the main problems that they did not figure out until way at the end, like just a couple of years ago, is that initial procedure with the urologist, they had scanned the area in the beginning and they had found evidence of a little bit of like a little nodule, but they're like, oh, that's nothing. Don't worry, you're a pretty little head about that. And so nobody would look in that area again to scan and to try to figure out what was going on. But I finally convinced somebody to put me under anesthesia and to examine that area. And it actually turned out that I had a huge, huge mass of scar tissue that was basically strangling all the nerves in the pelvic floor. And that's what was causing so, so much pelvic pain and intestinal dysfunction. And that had been there the entire time. And so it turned out that urologist had actually, something had gone wrong, and the instrument had injured the area and injured all of these nerves. And we just didn't know that. And I was truly excruciating pain that entire time. And everybody just said, you know, well, many young women experience pelvic pain, and it's often psychological. I mean, I cannot tell you how many times people told me that. And in fact, it was this huge, easily observable mass of damage sitting in the pelvic floor. And so once they finally found that, then we've started to address that sort of surgically. We're still working on trying to rehabilitate those nerves in that area to decompress all of that scar tissue and take that out. So in my case, unfortunately not as simple as, you know, I went in the supplement or I tried yoga and everything got better. That would have been great. And for some people that have problems, I'm a huge advocate of wellness, just basic wellness things, because I do think that I know that helps a lot of people, especially when they're not on the severe end of the spectrum of these illnesses. Those things are really helpful, and so it's important to not poo-poo them as, you know, silly or soft or fads or things like that. They really help people, and if it was a pill, we would definitely prescribe it, you know, yoga or getting enough sleep or, you know, going on a diet that's helpful to you. That medication would be patented and would be making a lot of money if it helped people.
Yeah, indeed. And I've been hearing more and more recently about people that have either fibromyalgia or chronic fatigue syndrome, and it's a shocker to diagnose, and even when it's diagnosed there doesn't seem to be any help out there.
Yeah, it is truly tragic. The main issue is that for so long the medical community really, really has considered these problems psychosomatic, fibromyalgia less so, chronic fatigue syndrome very much so. And that's just incorrect. All of the research that exists clearly demonstrates that there are all kinds of real physiologic irregularities in the immune system, in the mitochondrial function, on and on. on and on and on. And so, but that doesn't matter. It's been incredibly difficult to pry open any type of real funding from the government. The numbers, I often say it's like, the amount of funding that's put into these illnesses is literally as if somebody said to you, like, wow, you seem to be very hungry. You should go get dinner. And you say, well, I don't have any money for dinner. So, oh, I'll give you some money. Here's one penny for dinner.
Oh, gosh.
And that's just an absurd. The lack of funding is so profound that there's no treatments for these things. Of course, there's no diagnostic criteria that's universally understood and taught to doctors. It's because they're not doing the research and the funding. That's not the mysterious part. That is the part that is easy to understand.
Yeah.
But I will say that actually is changing, because one of the most common triggers for chronic fatigue syndrome is a very bad viral infection. That has been known since the beginning. Those were the first documented cases, was a post-viral incident. And so what they're actually seeing, and this has been reported on in the Times and the Post, everywhere in the United States, is that there is a real phenomenon of a post-COVID chronic fatigue syndrome. It's called myalgic encephalomyelitis, or chronic fatigue syndrome, MECFS. And even Dr. Fauci has given multiple talks to doctors and public Zoom calls saying, you have to take this seriously. We have to take this seriously now, that this is not a psychosomatic phenomenon. This is, in some people, a very bad viral infection can set off this neuroendocrine immune inflammatory problem, and it makes them absolutely miserable. And that is not less important than taking care of people in the when they are acutely sick. It matters. If your entire life is going to be devastated and you're going to be bedridden for the rest of your life, we have to take that as seriously as we take anything else.
Yeah, people shouldn't have to live in pain in this day and age. Not really. Not when we can do the amount of things we can do with other illnesses and other amazing things. They shouldn't have to live in pain with things, illnesses like that.
Yes, and at the very least, this is what I always say to doctors when I speak to doctors. I understand how frustrating it is to be a physician and have nothing that you can offer your patient, and that's not your fault. But what often happens is if they have nothing to offer their patient, they sort of turn it back. They don't want to feel inadequate, so they sort of turn it back on the patient and kind of blame the patient for creating their own illness. And so if you're a doctor and there's no treatment, that's fine. You have this incredible power at your fingertips where you can just believe the patient is telling you the truth, and you can be compassionate and kind and say, I am so sorry to hear this. This sounds like, whatever. It's one of these illnesses. Not that much is known about them, but I believe you. I want to help you try to, look in the area to find if there are anyone that knows more than I do about these problems. That is an easy and totally doable response that any physician can do. And it removes what I think is the most damaging thing that the doctors do, which is they don't believe, and then they blame you, and this turns you against yourself, and it is totally unnecessary. Doctors don't need to do that. And so if they can just sort of put a backstop against this sort of wave of disbelief and condescension that normally, washes over this type of patient, if they can protect them from that is doing an enormous service for their patients.
Yeah, the poor patient is, I'm sure, feeling bad enough without that. Yeah. On top of it.
Yeah, exactly.
And along the way, did you meet other people during your writing of the book? Did you meet other people that went through mysterious illnesses as well?
Yes. So when I first started writing the book, it was actually really in the beginning. It was right when I sort of defected and started learning more and went into alternative medicine, started learning more about these illnesses. And there was all kinds of, data and patient stories about hypotheses about what's going on and how people can get better. And because prior to that, 3 years into it, I thought I was the only person that had ever experienced these things. I thought that I was just this unique, just freak event. And then I met the first person like me, and she starts telling me her story. And I was like, wait. That's exactly like my story. And then I met another person. It's the same thing, exactly the same story over and over and over again. And then especially when I was, you know, publicly writing a book about this, like the bat signal went up and so many people, I mean, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people came out of the woodwork to talk to me about their stories and their illnesses. And it's not exactly the same, but if you just zoom the camera out, you know, a couple of clicks, it's basically the same story in broad strokes over and over and over again.
Yeah, all getting the same thing from their doctor, I'm guessing.
Yes, the thing that is the most common to all of us is the experience of the medical system and being treated so poorly.
Yeah. Well, I think the book will help a lot of people because I think it'll help a lot of people, at least if it can't find a cure for their particular illness. It'll make them think, well, I'm not on my own and I'm not making it up and I'm not going mad.
Yes, I think that really is, at the end of the day, that's the point of this book, is that you're not crazy and you are not alone and you deserve to be cared for. These are really serious, really debilitating illnesses, and we really need to change the way that we treat them socially and, of course, the way that we treat them in the medical system.
Yeah, I agree. And if any of our listeners want to find out more, the book is called The Lady's Handbook for Her Mysterious Illness. It's by Sarah Ramey, who we're speaking to now, and we're selling it right now on our website, which is of course tre.radio. How are you now, Sarah? Are you doing okay?
Yeah, I definitely still have a lot of problems, but I've really learned to cope with them a lot better and to manage it, and I'm just working on it just like the rest of us. We're kind of all in it together.
Yeah, well, I wish you lots of luck and well done on the book. Thanks for being
on
the show.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Bye.